and welcome to the Hoop Collective Podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Sunday afternoon. Joining us from New York City, Tim Bontes.
Hello, everybody.
Joining us from Dallas, Texas, where the Mavericks continue to confound, they win games they should lose and lose games they should win, is Ben McMahon.
Howdy, partners. I drew the wrath of that pesky little Pelicans fan base last night because I mentioned in a tweet before the game that they were punting, which I did not think was an offensive term for a team that was sitting out its three highest paid players, and as well as Trey Murphy III on a back-to-back. That was totally brutal. Didn't get to the hotel till 4:35. And there were some angry Pelicans folks. The team social media accounts were mocking me, doing the old alternating capital and lowercase letters. I mean, whoo! Tell you what, Jordan Hawkins wasn't punting, baby. He was lighting it up. Rising stars candidate Jordan Hawkins.
Just anecdotally, there's been some wild schedule situations over the last 7 to 10 days, and I'm not sure it has to do with the rash of blowouts, but I would expect that it would. But just this concept that you should never play a back to back when you go east, never.
And especially when you are pushed back, and it's our company, but when you're pushed back, and so it's a later tip than normal because it's a national TV game, like they were in Denver, whereas we all know the airport is on the other end of the earth.
At the end of a long road trip. And then you, on the other side of it, now this was going west, but you had the Bucks getting to play the Celtics. The Celtics, now forget about the overtime game, but I actually personally think that Florida to the Northeast road trips are a little bit ridiculous on back-to-backs. So somebody used to live in Florida.
Look at the week that the Celtics were involved in.
Yeah.
Orlando, Minnesota wins in Orlando Tuesday. There's a storm. They leave Wednesday morning. They get to Boston at 2 p.m. on Wednesday. They have to play the Celtics Wednesday night, second night of a back-to-back. Rudy Gobert and Mike Conley don't play. Game goes to overtime. Wolves competed really hard. Ultimately, Boston tried for a few minutes and won the game. Then the Celtics fly 3 hours to Milwaukee to play a back-to-back on Thursday on national TV, one of the marquee games of the schedule. Insane.
You got to do air quotes when you say play. To play.
Well, they got their asses kicked, but they played just about everybody and just got drilled and then sat there. Well, they sat. I mean, Joe Mazzulla, I think, fairly looked at it and said, we're down 40 at halftime. I'm just going to pump the second half of this game. So they get routed. Then they come back to Boston Saturday. They play Houston, which has bounced all over the place. Yeah. Was in Detroit on Friday, played a close game. Fred Van Vliet played 43 minutes. They escape from Detroit, give Detroit their 36th loss of the year. And then they come in and they get drilled. The second item.
Right. But okay. So if you're going to have back to backs, Detroit, Boston, that's going to happen. I'm talking about when Boston goes to Milwaukee, I believe it was a 6:30 start.
Yeah.
Right. So it negates the, you technically you're going east to west there, but it negates the hour. Not that an hour difference means that it would have been
It's also not a short flight.
Right. Yeah. It's 2.5, 2:45 probably.
Well, and the Pelicans going from Denver to Dallas. It was an 8 o'clock tip local in Denver. You lose an hour.
And it's a national TV game, so it's going to be longer anyway.
Right. Then they had weather. We all know how far out the airport is. They didn't get to their hotel until 4:35 a.m. They sit Zion. They sit Ingram. They sit McCollum. They sit Trey Murphy. The Mavs are missing guys too, including Luka. But, And you mentioned it, Wendy. The Mavericks have had maybe their two worst losses of the year playing skeleton crews for the Grizzlies and the Pelicans, and maybe their two best wins of the year, beating the Wolves and beating the Knicks without Luka.
Right. It's just like, look, we're at the time of the year where guys start to get dinged up, and every team has 1 to 3 players that just have an injury. That's what happens. But then I think we could use a little AI on this scheduling that not only figures out the dates, but plug it into the computer and let the AI figure out how to maybe better organize the distance travel. Because
that's what they are doing, though.
Hey, one thing about AI, there won't be any practice. Allen Iverson does not.
Well, I don't know what they're using, but it seems to me like it could work better. The other thing is for the league, Denver should be considered, you know, in the Western time zone because of how far the airport is. I can't even tell you. It almost doesn't even matter. If you're late for your flight, it's obviously, you know, just, you know, kills you. But even if you're on time, when you're on your way to the Denver airport and you get off, I think it's I-70 or I-76, and you know, you've made the drive, the 35 or 40 minute drive out, and it says, okay, Peña Boulevard, exit for the Denver International Airport. Okay, we're at the airport. And then it says Denver International Airport, 13 miles. The access road is 13 miles long.
And the access road. This is not a problem for NBA teams, but I do got to tell you, me being a cheap ass, not paying TSA pre-check, Denver's one place where it does make me think twice.
This is when I go around the country and people say, hey, love the podcast. Maybe they say they hate the podcast behind my back, but when they speak to me, they say, love the podcast. Most of the time, they says the second thing they say to me is, how could McMahon not have TSA?
In the past 2 weeks, I've seen several people from the league in airports and arenas around the country since you said that. And all of them have immediately said, what the hell is this guy doing not having pre-check?
I'm cheap and I struggle with paperwork.
It's a combination. We're going to do it for him.
We should get sponsored. We should get sponsored by the TSA pre-check program. We should get a sponsorship. Sponsored.
It's not... All right, forget about it. McMahon, it's
$17 a year, McMahon. It's unacceptable.
I've seen you... Well, I'm not even going to say it. All right. I was going to say, we're going to do the paperwork for him.
I don't believe it. You promised before. You've let me down many a time.
We let you down? Okay. All right. There was a trade in the NBA on Sunday. I don't think the trade is really all that interesting. I think what the trade says is more interesting. It went down early in the morning. Detroit and Washington, two of the worst teams in the NBA. It's really
playing
not...
each other on Monday, ironically.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yes, they are.
Boy, that could be a major factor in that game. Anyway, the Pistons traded Marvin Bagley III and Isaiah Livers and two future second-round picks. And the second-round pick protections are odd, but it's 24 and 25 for Danilo Gallinari and Mike Muscala. This is definitely a moving of the deck chairs. However, the most important thing about it is that Bagley's $12.5 million that was going to be on the books for Detroit next year moves to Washington's books. For that $12.5 million, Washington basically gets the two second rounders. We'll see whether Gallinari and Muscala stay there if they're rerouted or eventually bought out. I doubt the two of them are really excited about that.
it feels Washington, though.
The irony to this is that this trade sort of feels like the Ish Smith trade to Philly several years ago when the Colangelos took over from Sam Hinkie and that team, which was an absolute train wreck. They were more or less ordered, go get some sort of actual point guard to run the team. And when you look at this Detroit team, which can't shoot at all, it's like, oh, hey, you trade for Mike Muscala and Danilo Gallinari. At least you're getting a couple of guys that teams are going to respect as shooters. Though obviously the more important part is the shedding of money for next season.
Right. So I'm not sure why Detroit wants a bunch of cap space, what they think they're going to do with it, but they now have over $60 million. And so the question is, what other moves could they do if that indeed is their focus? And there's one in particular. Basically, this highlights Bojan Bogdanović. Mm-hmm. Bojan is a player who would be probably desired by just about every contender out there. Perimeter player who can shoot the three. He's not a great defensive player, but he isn't a hole either. He's serviceable. There have been times in his career where he's been, you know, pretty good defensively. Not sure where he's at now. It's kind of hard to judge it. The whole Detroit defensive system is a bit of a mess, but he's on the books for $20 million this year and $19 million next year. His contract slightly goes down. It's a very desirable contract for a number of different reasons. And so really the thing is if Detroit is beginning their restructuring here, because I know what you're saying, Bontemps, it's a good, you know, the 76ers, you know, for years went doing everything they possibly could to acquire draft picks, not even really caring about the veterans that came with them. And then when Brian Colangelo took over, the Ish Smith deal brought in a point guard because they needed a point guard. And they actually, I think, traded two second round picks for him. You really want to unearth that. I think they had actually released Ish Smith like several months before. And so they gave him away, just cut him for free. And then they paid two draft picks to get him back. And the point was, like, the era of them not caring about their record and accumulating draft picks was over. And Sam Hinkie was out of there within days, if not weeks, if not days.
Well, I think he was officially out of there. He wasn't officially out of there until the end of the season. But that, when the Colangelos came in, that was
right
all but over anyway.
Well, anyway, I'm not sure that, you know, they're hoping Danilo Gallinari provides a steadying veteran.
No, the parallel is just that they're a disaster of a team, and it's a similar thing. Like, what are you doing at 3-36 trading draft picks anywhere? Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Right. So, yeah.
Except they're dumping money that they don't want for next year, you know, and cap space, again, you always think free agency and cap space, but we've seen a lot of time, like Sam Presti, is part of the way he's collected a decent amount of these picks is basically renting out cap space. That's always a possibility.
They're still renting cap space. They made a trade for Kevin Porter Jr. a few months ago that was renting out cap space.
Mm-hmm.
They could still rent out more cap space this year if they wanted to.
Right. The one significant difference too for Detroit than teams in the past is in the past, you didn't have to spend the money. You would eventually have to pay your players if you didn't get to the salary floor, but you didn't have to spend the salary cap space. In the new CBA, the rule is by the start of the regular season, you have to spend the cap space. So it is a bit of a ticking clock on that compared to what it used to be, which could put you in a situation if you're Detroit, not exactly a glamour market, that if you're not able to properly use that cap space in a good way, whether it is to acquire a players to help you win or players that will give you draft picks or spending it on good players, you may end up spending it on not so good players and making your situation worse.
Well, that's the thing. So last summer, the Pistons had cap space and they elected to use it on veteran players who would quote unquote help them immediately. Joe Harris and Monty Morris. Now, Morris has been hurt. Joe Harris is buried on the bench. So they've just gone through a transaction cycle where they decided to use cap space to bring on players and it was blown up in their face. So look, if you want to get off Bagley's contract, fine. But the accumulation of cap space to me seems questionable decision because it's not exactly an incredibly deep free agent class. And I don't think Paul George is considering going to Detroit.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't think free agency is a realistic path for the Pistons at this point for a variety of reasons.
So the market for Bojan, if they go, would be interesting. He's on a cap figure that makes him tradable. He's not a rental. The team that comes up immediately, Bontemps, is the Philly 76ers, who have expiring contracts, extra draft picks. He would fit in nicely there. But there are some other teams as well. But I think Philly is a team that is probably keeping an eye on Detroit pretty closely.
Yeah, and he could be a rental if you want. He's got a very small partial guarantee for next season. So it's more or less an expiring contract. If you don't want to have him around, you don't have to for next year. And yeah, like you said, as a combo forward who's scoring around 20 a game and is a good three-point shooter and, you know, is certainly slipped defensively, but you could put him out there and he's probably not going to kill you defensively. That's a guy that, in theory, a lot of competitive teams would want to have on their team. I think the question comes back to with that, is Detroit going to move him in a deal and try to get as much as they can? Like, they could have done this a year ago and the price was very high and they ended up not doing anything. And the other way you could look at this trade in some respects is, all right, we're trying to add shooting to this team. We're trying to make sure we're not the worst team of all time. If you trade Bojan Bogdanovic off this team, it increases your chances of being the worst team of all time. Because at this point, the Pistons are 3-36 and they're on pace to win like 7 games, which would be the worst team ever. And I suspect that while I'm sure they're having one eye on the summer, they are going to try to avoid being the worst team ever. So I do think that's a real thing to weigh in terms of whether Bojan actually would be on the trade market or not. If I had to guess, I would guess Boyan's on the team on February 10th, because I think they're going to be trying like hell to make sure they win 10 games.
And, you know, then he'd be an expiring next year. And, you know, he's one of these guys who there's a long list of teams who would be interested in adding him, but are there teams that would be interested in giving up value that the Pistons believe is reasonable to get him? Like, the Mavericks have had interest in Bogdanovic since he was in Utah. They're not alone in that. Like, who doesn't want a 6'8" shooter who, you know, has some playoff experience and, you know, isn't hungry for the ball necessarily and competitive, all those kind of things. But I don't know that it's if they're still looking for like first round kind of compensation, I don't know if that's going to materialize.
The other thing that Detroit could do is that they have a bunch of expiring contracts on their books now with Gallinari and Muscala being added. Joe Harris is a $20 million expiring contract. Alec Burks is a $10 million. Monty Morris is a $10 million. They have as much expiring money on their books as anybody. They could basically do, you know, the old pre-agency where they could try to take on a player who another team doesn't want and take on money and basically do it now. I don't have a great list of players who I would suggest for that. This isn't going to happen because he was already there, but like a player like Jeremy Grant, who maybe Portland would want to move off of, and you know, they have him on this long contract and that's a way to get Portland out of the contract.
Well, look, we talked about it the other day. If Golden State decides to move off Andrew Wiggins, that would be an interesting landing spot for him, I think. If you're the Pistons, they don't have any wing play, really. He has proven in the past to be a good shooting wing. Obviously, he's been horrible this year for Golden State. But like we talked about last week, if you're a team in a small market or an undesirable free agent destination, and you believe Andrew Wiggins can get back to the player he was 2 years ago, like that's a guy who would really help this Pistons team. I don't know what they're going to decide to do, but like there are moves that they could make now if they wanted to try to get guys like that, or, you know, players that they think could help them. And frankly, I think that would be, I mean, we've talked about that with Philly, right? That's been the question with the Sixers since they made the James Harden trade. Are they going to make trades for February to get better now? Or are they going to try to buy their time for the summer to go after some big name free agents? Now, obviously those are two teams in extraordinarily yes. different situations, but it's ultimately the same choice. And if you're Detroit and you can get guys that you think are fits with Jalen Duren and Cade Cunningham and their young players going forward, I see no reason to wait if the price is right to do it now.
Well, and Indiana's in that same boat, but kind of in an in-between situation where it's a small market, but that is a team that's on the rise. And so, you know, they've been linked to Siakam since the summer. And so the question that's been brought up is, well, why give up assets for Siakam when you might be able to sign him this summer? And I think one reason to say to do it would be because if you really, really want a chance to sign him this summer, you would probably be best served to get him in the building, in the system. Hopefully, I don't know how long Halliburton's going to be out, but hopefully, you know, getting fed by Halliburton a whole lot and realizing, wow, playing this fast, you know, with this kind of all-star point guard is really, really fun. And that, you know, that run the rest of the season, I would think would increase the odds as opposed to just trying to recruit him with no ties to him.
I don't think Indiana would trade for Siakam unless they had a pretty good feel he was going to remain. So I think if you got serious with there's two negotiations there. One is negotiation with the Raptors for the contract or for the trade, and the other would be for Siakam for the contract, even though you're not supposed to do it.
Right.
That's what happened. I mean, that's what happens in, like, you know, world soccer. You know, you negotiate. Sometimes the player negotiates with the team and says, yeah, I'll go play for you for this amount of money. And then the team has to go to his team and then negotiate a fee. And sometimes it happens in the inverse order. And quite frankly, that happens in the NBA, you know, regularly. Sometimes it happens with the team's blessing. Sometimes it doesn't. But any player who gets traded of you know, repute, gets traded, who's a free agent to be, you can almost guarantee, whether anybody wants to admit it or not, that there's been talk between the player's agent and the team. And that's almost certainly what would happen with Siakam. Unless you saw Siakam go at the deadline buzzer for like a couple of second round picks, an expiring contract or something, if there was anything of real value given for Siakam, which is what it would take for Indiana to get him, you know that there's been an understanding. And, you know, that's just what happened with New York and OG Anunoby. There's, you know, the Knicks don't give up those two pieces unless they're pretty sure OG Anunoby intends to stay there.
But first of all, not necessarily an understanding. It doesn't have to be, hey, if you trade for me, I will resign. Even I would say an indication of a willingness of a, hey, if we feel like this is a good fit, then we are open to resigning at
X number.
Well, let me just tell a story because I've written this before and the parties confirmed it. And, you know, I guess it was technically tampering, but it's in a book. So before LeBron James came back to Cleveland in 2014, when the Cavs were planning on building around Kyrie Irving and they were trying to sign Gordon Hayward, when Kevin Love asked for a trade from the Minnesota Timberwolves, David Griffin, the general manager of the Cavs, called up Jeff Schwartz, the power agent that represents Kevin Love. And he said, I'd like to trade for Kevin. I know he's only got 1 year left on his contract. If we trade for him, would he stay here? If, you know, I mean, I'm sure they was offered him a max, but would he stay here? And Jeff Schwartz said, no, don't trade for him. He wouldn't stay there. So Griff had done his due diligence, scratched Kevin Love off of the books and moved on to other business, specifically trying to do a deal for Gordon Hayward. When LeBron announced he was coming home, David Griffin's phone rings. Hello, Jeff Schwartz. Literally, I mean, Griff told me the story. It's in the book. He's literally in his office within 5 minutes of the letter, the essay from Lee Jenkins coming out in Sports Illustrated. One of the first people who got to him was Jeff Schwartz, informing him that Kevin Love was now ready to be a Cav. I think Kevin Love and LeBron might have communicated as well, but then after that was settled, then they called and negotiated with the Wolves. So that is a routine piece of business that happens. So, and that's one of the reasons why Siakam hasn't been traded, is that there have been, and this has again been reported, that Siakam has, you know, been involved. Some teams have been interested where Siakam wasn't interested necessarily in staying. And part of it also was Siakam wasn't interested in getting traded at all, I don't think, because if he would make all NBA this year and he was on the Raptors, he would be eligible for the Supermax. You know, we're in the stress max zone here with Siakam. And so it doesn't look like he's making all NBA. I guess I shouldn't rule that out, but I think, you know, he's made all NBA, I think, twice in the past and in July. Well,
by the way, just as a bit of a non sequitur, one thing to think about with this going forward is Siakam last year finished ninth in voting among forwards for all NBA, right? If he'd made all NBA last year, he'd have been eligible for the Supermax because he would have made it 2 years in a row. Or he would have been able to sign it, I should say, because he's going to be a free agent. The three of the guys who finished ahead of him, Giannis, Jimmy Butler, and LeBron, wouldn't have been allowed to be all NBA players under the new system with the new rules. Kevin Durant wouldn't have been able to be voted for either. He finished eighth ahead of Siakam. Kawhi Leonard wouldn't have been able to be voted for either. He finished 10th behind Siakam. Point is, if this rule had been in place last year, Pascal would have qualified for all NBA, and we would have been talking about, well, are the Raptors going to give him a Supermax? Well, okay, he would have been fifth among eligible forwards to vote for.
Right, but this rule, as well as the positionless ballot.
Sure. My point is that there were five or six of the 15 players last year who were all NBA players didn't play 65 games. So I'm just saying,
that is a great point.
There's already been a lot of stress around these votes and whether guys are going to make it and get this thing. And like this award or this rule is going to add another level of intrigue and stress on that on both ends. Cause you're going to have guys who would qualify it, that should qualify for it and should, that like Tyrese Haliburton this year would have been on pace to get the fun max. Now he's got this hamstring injury, or we'll see when he's able to play.
Well, Haliburton
got guys
on Supermax.
Yeah.
I'm saying he'd get the 30% if he Haliburton, makes all NBA.
Haliburton already got the fun max, but we don't know if he gets the escalator.
Yeah, well, it would be a little more fun for him if he gets an extra large chunk of money.
No, I agree. I agree.
I'm just saying
he already got the contract, just to be clear.
But there's that level of player that's focused on that, and there's guys like Bam Adebayo and De'Aaron Fox and a bunch of guys that are going to be in the mix for all NBA that may play enough games, may not, may make it because other guys don't. So it's an interesting wrinkle to think about with this rule going forward, because as we know, every year we get down to, like Jaylen Brown last year, we get down to the end of the season and there's a lot of focus on, well, is this guy going to be all NBA? Is he not? And what does that portend for his contract in the summer?
And by the way, Siakam has only missed one game this season, and he led the league in minutes per game the last 2 years, average minutes per game. He missed some time, but he played 71 games last season, so he'd have been eligible. So that's very, very interesting to point out. Speaking of what the Pistons are going to do, I thought there was a fascinating comment from Monty Williams before the game on Saturday. Was it on Friday? Was it Friday? Friday.
I believe it was yesterday after Friday's game, but I could be wrong on that.
Okay. He basically said that there had been a the term he used was big organizational meeting on Friday, and in that meeting it was pointed out to him, you know, maybe he should be playing Jaden Ivey more. The guy that they
it's not that, it's worse than that. It's a Jaden Ivey, the point guard they drafted with the 5th overall pick in the 2022 NBA draft, should maybe be playing point guard. That was
starting,
what was pointed out to
starting.
Him. Well, no, but playing with the ball in his hands. That was the point. It was, hey, Monty, maybe you should play Jaden Ivey with the ball. Oh, you know, it's on me. I just wasn't thinking about that.
No,
should have done that.
The phrase he used was, I have to eat it. I wish I did it earlier.
Well, it's never too late when you're 3-30 some on.
Well, the point is,
we haven't
talked a lot about the Pistons on this podcast, but the few times we've talked about it, we've said we can't believe Jaden Ivey's not playing. Like, yeah, we can't, you know, Jaden Ivey's got to be, you know, really.
When he is playing, he's standing in the corner watching.
Right.
Well, they're playing Bontemps' favorite player over him.
Yes, Killian Hayes, best player in the league, according to Monty Williams, apparently.
Well, I'm trying to see if I can get what percentage of time he's been at the point this year.
We don't need to get that in depth on it. It's not enough. It's one of many reasons.
The point is, they're halfway through the season, and there's just no way that this hasn't been brought up to over and over and over. It's certainly been brought up by people who are around the team. Forget even about like fans. Like,
it ain't that loud at those games. I'm sure you can hear some of those fans.
Like, yes. I mean, and like, look, the Pistons organization, like, I'm sure that he was told before this quote big. This big,
right,
the organization,
big,
you know.
Yeah,
I mean, honestly, I don't even know what to make of that. I don't even know what to make of that. I mean,
so,
basketball go ahead.
Reference as a position estimate thing is part of each
sure.
player's. Their estimate is he's played 4% of his minutes at point guard this year.
Jesus.
Yeah,
but he was I don't know, man. It's a mismatch roster all the way around. And when Cade's healthy, Cade is going to have the ball when he's on the floor, which always made Ivy an odd fit. And I get when you're as bad as the Pistons have been, you don't necessarily draft for need, but man, they've got a whole lot of guys. I mean, it is.
You don't need to be playing Killian Hayes. That it's very simple. Don't play him and let Jaden Ivey have the ball. It's not, this ain't complicated.
The story goes that, look, I don't know what was in Monty McNair's head, the general manager of the Kings. But the story goes, and, you know, they had De'Aaron Fox, but the story goes that Jaden Ivey, via his representation, let it be known to the Kings he didn't want to be there. And so the Kings, again, they may have taken Keegan Murray anyway.
Right.
But he tried to avoid Sacramento, which he did. You know, that was a surprise that Sac would pass on him that night. It was a surprise.
Right.
So he gets to Detroit, which he had to realize was a possibility. You know, he knew that Cade was there. So he must have felt that that was a possible match, despite Cade being on the roster and despite there being another lottery pick guard, Killian Hayes, there. So I will say that part of it was he kind of guided himself to Detroit, whatever that's worth, I'm pointing out the full rounding of the story. But either way, you have the number 5 pick in the draft, who was as exciting of a player in college as we've seen the last few years, when so many of the top players are coming from G League Ignite, Overtime Elite, or overseas, or Australia, you know, Europe or Australia. Like, watching Jaden Ivey play in college was extremely exciting. You know, he was a big time impact player, a lot of excitement around him. And the way they've just sort of let him wither this season is frankly unacceptable. Like, look, if he's not playing well, okay, you know, but like, what they've done to him is just like, it's egregious on what's going on with that team that season.
It's one of many reasons why it's been a complete disaster this year beyond the 3-36.
Listen, that's enough Detroit talk. Let's brighten the mood a little bit.
All right.
Yeah. Am I talking about the Bulls?
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click ranger.com or just stop by. Now let's talk about the play of the week, the pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Boy, oh boy.
I don't know if I've ever seen anything more disappointing and ridiculous than the booing of the widow of Jerry Krause.
I mean, I think I've seen things that were more disappointing and ridiculous, but it's up there. That's for sure.
I mean, it's a dead guy's wife. And by the way, in a city in Chicago, by the way, that is basically known for epic failures in sports. Their football team.
I wouldn't agree with that. I think they're probably known
their
for
two baseball teams.
The Bulls
were known
winning
for not...
six titles in 8 years. Okay. So I think that was pretty good.
Also, what are the baseball teams
talking about? The Bears. Uncle Jim led them to a Super Bowl championship.
They've won one Super Bowl. They haven't. The last All Pro quarterback they had, I believe, was Sid Luckman, which was in 80 years ago. The two baseball teams were known for having 100 year droughts without winning a championship. And the one team that's had an incredible run.
The Blackhawks have won like a couple of cups in the last 10, 15
and
years.
And then had unbelievable scandal within the organization on a variety of fronts.
I believe the Chicago Sky might have won a title as well.
Yes, they have. The Sky have won a title. The point is, the one great dynasty in Chicago sports history built by Jerry Krause, and Jerry Krause is treated like David Kahn in Chicago. It is insane.
While David Kahn is just over in Paris listening to this podcast, he's like, wait, he just took some shrapnel. Holy Moses.
If Jerry Krause did what David Kahn did in Minnesota, he would deserve to be booed in Chicago.
Look,
the way
you know what this is about.
This is insane.
You know what this is about.
Of course I do.
The reason that the people booed Jerry Krause was because of The Last Dance.
Well, because, I mean, Michael Jordan is a bully. He's a petty bully. He's arguably the greatest player of all time. But he's a petty bully, and they followed his lead.
That's right.
Totally.
That's what that was. That was, I mean, because how many of those fans really remember the intricacies of Jerry Krause?
I mean, none of them. It was also, it was a very clumsily done thing.
Well,
to think the people booing, like booing a dead man is rough regardless, but I would like to think those folks weren't aware at the time they were booing that the man's widow was sitting there.
Yeah, I think the way it was presented on TV, we saw his widow there and we saw her tear up. That wasn't necessarily...
The people in the building were aware.
Ugh.
I know they were aware that she was there, but they were booing his face on the scoreboard. They weren't directly booing
his,
her, but...
His face, sure, her face was on the scoreboard. I'm just saying, I talked to several people who were there.
I don't want to defend them. But let me just say real quick, what was going on was the Bulls have retired jerseys. And by the way, Jerry Krause's name is in the rafters at being honored. They also have done statues. I mean, Jordan has a statue at the United Center. Mm-hmm. This was the beginning of their Ring of Honor. They didn't previously have a Ring of Honor. The difference between a Ring of Honor and a retired jersey is how badly you need to sell tickets in January if you want my
opinion. I was going
to
say.
But that's neither here nor there.
We've been mediocre for years. So let's celebrate this. Buy a ticket.
Yeah. And Phil Jackson came. But Scottie Pippen and Jordan didn't. Although Jordan did a video and he managed to make quite the impression because in the video he was sitting in front of this gorgeous trophy case and you could see at least three of his finals MVPs. I think the other three might have been behind his head, but it was very impressive, the room that he was in. But the reason Krause got booed was because of the way he was, you know, portrayed in The Last Dance. And, you know, the reason that Scottie Pippen went after Jordan, you know, in that book and in subsequent interviews was because of the way he was portrayed in The Last
Dance. And he wasn't there, and Dennis Rodman wasn't there either.
Yeah, Rodman's kind of Rodman, but yes, you're right.
Rodman, supposedly there was some weather-related issues. You never know.
Yeah.
Well, anyway.
The three of them weren't there.
Yes. And look, like, The Last Dance was amazing, and Jordan had full control of the edit, and it was what it was. And I'm glad, you know, I'm glad he was being real. Like when Jordan like gave that speech about what it meant to play with him, and then he said, time to take a break. Like, I want that. And so like, I want him being real, and I want him to tell his side of the story, but there's fallout for that. Mm-hmm. And that fallout was unfortunate, right? That, you know, hit Thelma Krause, Jerry Krause's widow, in a moment that is a very unfortunate mark on Bulls history.
I would say that the Ring of Honor ceremony went slightly worse than their Zach LaVine trade discussion so far.
Well, by the way, there has never arguably been a more immediate dose of karma in human history than that happening at halftime. And then the Warriors coming out in the third quarter. And
human history, McMahon. Human history.
Outscoring the Bulls 48-20 in the third quarter and just curb stomping them instantly after that.
Steve Kerr had Jerry Krause's back.
Kenny Atkinson.
Another man played by Jordan.
I don't know for sure who gave the halftime speech. Not that there's a halftime speech, but Steve Kerr wasn't in the Warriors locker room at halftime. He was being honored as part of the 97-98 team, or maybe it was
72 win, the 72 win champions.
Okay.
They honored the 72 win.
Team. All right. The 95-96 team. He was out there. So he wasn't in the locker room going over. Maybe Steve should skip the locker room going forward. But yes, they gave up 50 in the third, and then the Warriors,
the most points of the year and lost.
Yeah. And Curry didn't even have that good of a game. Curry was, I know he's 3 of 15 in the first half or something like that. So, yeah, so that was very unfortunate, and the Bulls did come back and win Saturday night in San Antonio, although that's not much. Victor didn't play. That's not saying much. But
hey, yeah. Trey Jones started a point guard. The Spurs were somewhere.
Balled out.
Ability when that happens.
He balled out in that game.
Almost like he should have been in the starting lineup all season, but I'm not one to question a legend.
No.
Yeah, Trey Jones and
don't want to be mean.
Jaden Ivey they can text each other memes. All right. I'd like to have some sun and fun in this podcast, but it's not happening because now we're
going to talk about trades. We're planning on hitting the Hawks. If we want sun and fun, we better skip past
what I'm saying. I was going to talk about the Hawks.
Let's spin it this way.
Like, man, about to come with some positivity?
Listen, I'm all about positive.
As if you are a leader in positivity there, Bontemps.
I have lots of positive moments. I specialize. They're just ignored.
Positive stuff. I saw, we'll go on. Saw a former Maverick who I went up and said hi to the other day, and that's the first thing he said to me. Anyways, we could spin it. Let's not talk about how messy it is in Atlanta. Let's just talk about potential destinations for DeJounte Murray, potential deals that would make sense, places where he might be able to make an immediate impact and move the needle. We could do that because it's messy in Atlanta. The fact that they're determined to trade this guy that they just gave up a ton of draft capital to get a year and a half ago is indication that things have gone off the rails.
As is losing by 28 at home to the Wizards, which is what they did Saturday night.
Yeah, so real quick on Atlanta, they're 8 games under .500. They are just outside the play-in line, which is they've been a play-in team the last 2 years. That is not what they were looking for when they hired Quinn Snyder midseason last year. They've actually gotten worse defensively. I mean, Quinn.
So what our guy Zach Lowe was thinking when he bet me that they were going to finish top five in the East earlier this year.
What was the wager?
I went on his pod before the season. He bet me $100 that the Hawks would finish top six. And before I could say absolutely, which I was about to, he then said, no, I'll make it top five. So I said,
oh my God.
Great.
I think it was supposed to be a steak dinner. And then Zach realized that would mean he'd have to actually socialize with you.
Listen, Bontemps has gotten reservations at Peter Luger before. And so I would have, hey, listen, man, I'll go spend Zach's money. I mean, $100 isn't going to get it done there, but I'll take the 100.
Jackson's old man is at Peter Luger's at the moment. He tells us Peter Luger's right? Great steakhouse in New York City.
It's in Brooklyn, actually,
which is in New York City. But thank you.
Well, that's true. But anyway,
they've
actually gotten worse defensively under Quinn Snyder, which is not what they were looking for. Because I mean, it helped to have the Stifle Tower out there in Utah, but they were tremendous defensive teams under Quinn Snyder.
It helped. Rudy propped up a very mediocre group around him. That's okay. What happened.
Does Quinn Snyder get no credit for being?
Quinn does. He structured a defense around a generational defensive talent. Look, I have a ton of respect for Quinn.
Well, look, and with all due respect,
we all do.
Clint Capela is not having his best season either, but their perimeter defense is awful. But okay, we don't have to get in. The point is, I would just say this about the Hawks. The Hawks in the last, since the summer of 2022, have been so overstuffed with talent on their roster that they've given away two players without getting anything in return. Yet they dumped John Collins for a second round pick, basically a salary dump. And then they traded Kevin Huerter for a first, which they get the Sacramento Kings first round pick this year, which they might end up drafting a Hall of Famer. But I'm just saying, like, they've to clear out room on their books for the amount of talent they've got on their roster. They've literally cast off two guys to get the salaries off their books in the last two seasons. And yet they are still well below 500 and not making any really progress.
And still owe the Spurs some significant draft capital.
I don't think they've paid any of that yet.
Nope, they have not. Starting next year, 25, 27, 29, I believe is the...
And swaps. And at least one swap, right? I think
maybe it's two picks and a swap. I'll look right now.
Well, they gave three firsts, but only two of them were theirs. I think maybe that other first might have been used. Also, Trae Young is shooting 42% on the season. He's having his worst shooting season since his rookie year.
We said we were going to spin it on who might.
You're right. All right. Anyway, so DeJounte is the name that is on everyone's
25, 26, 27, 26 swap, 25, 27. Unprotected first going to San Antonio.
Oh man.
Here comes this.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Which is where the discussions about what's going to happen with DeJounte Murray, that's sort of where you have to start with. The fact that they paid a huge price for a guy who they thought was going to keep them right in the mix at the top of the East. And instead, if they are trying to arbitrage that now, you should not be looking at it like, hey, we've got to get back the same value. We got to just make the best move we can make for our team if you decide you got to go in that direction. But that's typically not how teams look at this stuff.
Yeah.
And that's the first thing that's going to be said when that trade is made is look at what they gave up and look at what they got back.
Yep.
All right, well, let's talk about two guys they've extended, not just Murray. So Murray signed a 4-year, $120 million extension in July. They're looking to trade him right now. So that's one thing. And then DeAndre Hunter, they signed him to a 5-year, $90 million extension last season. And he's a guy who I think has a good chance of getting traded as well.
They dangled him this summer.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if I'd put it that way. I would say that, he's a guy that they've been, I think, they would like to trade.
I would guess
will not be traded. But
so let's just cut to it. Wendy, you put some makeup on and went on TV and talked about DeJounte Murray to the Lakers. What do you think it would take from the Lakers to make that happen.
Okay. So as of Monday, when this podcast comes out, the whole Lakers roster is available to trade.
Yeah. January 15th is the final day before the deadline when all the contracts other than guys who've been extended in the season or traded can be
right. moved. In the case of the Lakers, it means Austin Reeves and Rui Hachimura were not eligible until Monday, can be traded. So a couple of things about DeJounte Murray. One is that he has a trade kicker in his contract, which Bobby Marks tells me would be the highest trade kicker. If he was traded, it'd be the highest trade kicker in league history. So as
is that because of how many years it's added on?
Yes, because with a trade kicker, you get a bonus per year you have left on your contract or the amount of money you have left on your contract. The other thing is you can't make more than the maximum salary. So there have been players on maximum salary contracts who've been traded in the past. Many of them have been traded in the past, but you can't get more than the max. Well, here's a player who's below the max, who has a big, giant contract. It's unusual for a player on this type of contract to get traded with this much left on his contract. So it would be, I believe Bobby said to me, it would be the highest trade bonus in the history of the league, $13 million. And that would have to be paid by the Hawks.
Mm-hmm.
But it goes onto the books of the team he gets traded to on a per year basis. And that it's about a little under $3 million per year. Now, that's not that big of a deal, but it is something to consider for a team that's potentially in the apron, that when you look at when you look at DeJounte Murray's numbers, you just need to consider that. I'm sure DeJounte Murray is like, send me the Lakers. I'll take the $13 million on the flight out of town. But that is one thing to now trade kickers are negotiable. You may remember, as a matter of fact, when Anthony Davis asked to be traded to the Lakers, he had a pretty big trade kicker, $7 or $8 million, I think it was. And he waived it to help the Lakers out on some stuff. It can be waived or it can be reduced, but I don't see why DeJounte would be in any mood to reduce it. So the Lakers,
a lot of Atlanta,
right. The Lakers would be the I've often said that the two assets that the Lakers have that have interest into teams around the league are Austin Reeves and their future first round pick that they have. They can trade either 29 or 30, not both.
They can also throw in some swaps.
They have all their swaps, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So that can be traded. Now, this is take some nuance, and anybody listening to this podcast, I already think understands this, but I seem to be having this back and forth with Kendrick Perkins regularly on TV. Is Zach LaVine a better player than Austin Reeves? Yes. So I was trying to explain to him that Austin Reeves has more value than Zach LaVine. I'm not saying that, you know, just like Bradley Beal. Bradley Beal got traded for expiring contracts and second round picks. He didn't get traded because he stinks. He got traded for that because of his contract and his no trade clause. The reason Austin Reeves has such value in trades, he makes $12 million. He makes $12 million and he's a starter level guard. And that is why he has value. He's more valuable than D'Angelo Russell because he's more productive than D'Angelo Russell and he makes $5 million less.
Well, he's more valuable than D'Angelo Russell because he's good. That's why he's more valuable.
Hey, D'Angelo Russell had 39 points in Utah last night.
It was a loss. Yes.
It was a step forward because he'd had 39 points like his last three games. So they need D'Angelo Russell to score no matter what happens.
But listen, just to cut to it, Austin Reeves potentially being included could make or break this deal.
Yes.
And so we thought Austin Reeves might be an ascending star. I think probably need to tap the brakes on that, but he is a quality starter on a great value contract,
which makes him a very good asset.
Right. And if you're talking about him plus a future pick that's far enough out, and I guess you can play with protections or whatever, but that pick's far enough out to where it's you're going to have to discuss protections because there's going to be some significant risk involved, just as there would be with any kind of swap. And I don't know that just straight up Reeves for Murray, like how much does that even move the needle?
Well, that deal doesn't work.
Well, I know, but I'm saying plus whatever you got to do to make the deal work. I'm saying
it's very, it wouldn't be very hard to make that work.
I know. I'm just saying just Reeves, et cetera, for Murray. But essentially, I'm saying, I don't know if moving Reeves and bringing in Murray, I don't know if that moves the needle for the Lakers. Murray, scouts I've talked to around the league, they're basically saying one thing they're trying to figure out with Murray is how good of a defensive player is he actually? He had a reputation for being a very good defense player in San Antonio, and you haven't seen that since he was traded.
Well, he gets a lot of steals. He led the league in steals a couple of years ago. He's got super long arms, so he gets his hands on balls. But I think if you look what's happening with the Hawks, where they're continually getting blown by on the perimeter, and then Capella isn't able to really help him as much at the rim as he used to, Murray's a part of that. Now, one thing I will say is that he was sort of viewed as a below average or average at best, but really below average shooter.
Yeah.
He is having his best three-point shooting year. He's averaging 39% on 6 a game. Coming in, he was the season, he was about 34%. So he, you know, I don't know if that's sustainable or if he's just on a hot streak, but he is, because the thing about the Lakers is they just can't afford to spend assets and get a guy who isn't helped them at all with spreading the floor. But he is
shooting
the ball pretty well.
Yeah, 39% from three on the highest volume of his career.
Yeah, so I think if you're the Lakers, you're trying not to give both Reeves and the pick. If you can give one and not the other.
Well, and look, if you're the Lakers, it has to be the pick. To me, you have to be willing to give up the draft compensation if you decide, hey, we've got to get DeJounte Murray, because the whole point is you're trying to win when you have the greatest player of this generation still playing at an all-NBA level at 39 years old. So, I mean, I'm not saying you just don't think down the road at all, but you are a mediocre team right now.
That might be charitable.
In a position of trying to make a win now major needle moving type of trade, and sending out your third best player, and just, even if you feel like it's an upgrade to your third best player, it ain't enough of an upgrade to make that kind of a difference.
Well, now, especially when you have three good players. We had to
merge D'Angelo Russell and discuss the draft compensation. If so, then you get aggressive in those conversations. But if Austin Reeves is involved, I just don't think it makes sense for the Lakers.
Well, if you're Atlanta, you it's not just the Lakers. This is what Woj was, I was talking about, I know that the Lakers and the Hawks have talked. And I know that it was like, okay, check back after January 15th. What Woj is saying is it's not just the Lakers. And I know the Knicks have been tied in. I would keep an eye on the Nets.
Well, the thing about DeJounte Murray is he's a guy who has to have the ball in his hands, right? Like that. I know he's shooting the ball well from three this year, but he's really a pretty ball dominant guard. Yeah,
that's why the Hawks are moving him.
Right. The fit there has not worked, in part because their perimeter defense has been terrible, because he was supposed to be a guy who would be locking up guys next to Trae Young, and he hasn't been, right? I mean, he's far from the only problem in Atlanta, but that was the theory of what they did, and it hasn't worked that way. Now,
I want to hear Wendy's list of teams.
Well, I was going to say the Nets are the team I've been thinking about with him for a while, because they don't really have anybody who can dribble. And if you put DeJounte Murray on the Nets, he would raise their level, I think, pretty significantly right away. If they, they have Spencer Dinwiddie as an expiring contract. They have draft assets. They've got Cam Thomas if they like him. Like, they have some stuff they could trade.
They have Phoenix draft assets.
That's right. So you put him on a team like that, I think that makes a lot of sense. I never liked the fit in New York. We talked about that before, because you got Jalen Brunson. And again, you're in the same situation you're in Atlanta. Why would you do that? And it's the same reason I don't like the fit for the Lakers, because while I think your point about Austin Reeves is spot on, I think we all have, a slightly overrated Austin Reeves, the player. But what's unquestionable is he's their third best player. They might not have a fourth good player. And if you're trading the third good player you have on the team to bring back one guy, you're more or less in the same spot you are.
Well, what if you don't trade Austin Reeves? What if you trade like D'Angelo Russell and the pick. And
well, that's what I was saying to McMahon's point. That to me, the Lakers need to add. They have a very shallow pool. Obviously, there's two huge fish in it, but they got a very shallow pool of good players. Taking out of that pool does not seem to make a lot of sense.
I also don't know where the Hawks, what the Hawks feel about Jalen Hood-Schifino. That would, you know, he's obviously a rookie, hasn't played much, but he's a guy that you could put in the deal because he's another young player. It almost functions as like another first round pick.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So if you were the Lakers and you made an offer that was like D'Angelo Russell, the first round pick that they have, haggle on the protection, and, you know, Hood-Schifino, you know, it's, they can at least say, well, we got two pieces and off the money.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, Russell has a player option for next year for $18 million, which I would be stunned if he doesn't pick up. And if he does pick it up, then that becomes a possible trade asset as well. So
I just still don't like the fit for the Lakers. I just don't. He's a good player. I just think it's a bad fit with the Lakers.
The Lakers, Pelinka is obviously going to be under pressure again to upgrade.
I'm
going to
tell you why the Lakers would do it. You know, first off, again, I'm always saying this. The Lakers don't get to go to the store and there's 30 players on the market to trade for and say, oh, we'll take this one. We'll take player 17 on the list. There's a small group of players who are available the Lakers can acquire with what they have. I do think DeJounte Murray is a player they can acquire. And when you compare him to Zach LaVine, he literally makes roughly half the money of Zach LaVine,
for
a little bit
months.
More than. But then it gets to 25, and you're still not paying him 40.
Okay, but
money, and it's a guy who plays who doesn't have injuries. I mean, he's had a past ACL, but he doesn't have huge injury issues with his knee right now like LaVine does, and he plays both ends of the court. I know he's maybe not as good defensively as his reputation may be, but he's better defensively than Zach LaVine. So if you're comparing those two and you're saying, well, he's eight figures a year cheaper, he's signed to a contract that most people in the league think is a reasonable contract, that they have to retrade him, they could. Mm-hmm. If he is shooting okay, if he plays both ends of the court, it doesn't take long to see how the Lakers might talk themselves into it. Also, I'll say, your point about him needing the ball, Bontemps, that's true. One of the things the Lakers are having a problem right now with is a guy to initiate their offense, because Russell has been so bad and Reeves has been not good in the starting lineup that they've been starting with LeBron as their point guard. And since LeBron's been playing point guard for them, his productivity has dipped significantly. His numbers in January, since he basically became the starting point guard, have really gone down. And I know that DeJounte isn't a starting point guard, but with him and LeBron out there, you have two different guys who can kind of initiate the offense. I'm not like super excited about it, but I'm trying to explain the way they may be seeing it.
If I'm Rob Pelinka, though, there's not a store with 30 guys available, but it's not just LaVine or DeJounte Murray. I'm calling Charlotte. I'm inquiring about Terry Rozier. I'm at least checking to see, you know, if he might be available at a significantly lower cost, because I think that, you know, that's a guy who would give you a lot of the stuff you need and wouldn't cost you as much. It's not the big splash, although he is averaging like 23 points per game. Nobody knows that because the Hornets
are playing on the Hornets. Yeah.
So here's Rozier's contract. Rozier makes $23 million this year, $25 million next year, and $26 million the year after, which is a team option. So you'd only technically be on the hook for him for another year if you wanted it. He is a shoot first player. I mean, and no one's going to say he's a two-way player, but he is a guy who can give you big time offense. He is explosive offensive player at times.
I mean, look, if I was the Lakers, I think a better move than getting DeJounte Murray would be getting Dorian Finney-Smith. Like, I think the Lakers need to try to find, like we talked about this a couple pods ago, last week, whatever. I think the Lakers need to try to find two guys who can play defense and hit catch and shoot threes. I know everybody's
looking
for those players.
The whole league wants that. The whole league.
Okay, I understand that.
Which is why the price for Dorian Finney-Smith isn't going to be a discount.
Well, I'm not saying it's going to be dramatically cheaper than DeJounte Murray, but my point is, if you're going to try to maximize this team, I think you've got to try to find as many of those guys as you can find between now and February and say, if we're going to have any chance of winning, it's going to be with LeBron and the ball in his hands all the time. When he doesn't have the ball in his hands, we're going to give it to Austin Reeves, and he's going to have the ball in his hands. And that's what we're going to do. And then we're going to have shooting and defense around Anthony Davis and LeBron James. And when he doesn't have the ball, give it to Austin Reeves. That, to me, like you talk about it all the time, when they were good last year, that was the formula, right? They guarded
people. I agree.
And they don't have any shooting on the team. Yeah. So they got to find, like, Torian Prince is not a great player, but he has come in and he can guard people to some degree, and he's hit open threes, right? Like, Torian Prince is, like, kinda. You said, man, he's shooting fine. My point is, I don't think getting DeJounte Murray and giving up a bunch of assets for him, when I think it's a bad fit with LeBron and going to be clunky, and it still doesn't solve the overall problem for them, to me.
Well, I think the Lakers' big challenge is their defense obviously isn't as good as it was last year, but there are certain times where their offense is just flatline. And at least if you have a guy like DeJounte, you have a guy who can go out there, create his own shot, be dynamic, can put up 25 points in a game. And again, I'm not like arguing like that this is a trade that's going to change the face of the conference, but I could understand, and also gives them a guy that if they needed to retrade, they could. I'm not in love with it, but I get it. I get why they're looking at it. And Let's just be honest, he's represented by Clutch.
Right.
So you know that LeBron
now
is...
Now we get to it. By the way, the Lakers are tied with the Magic for 28th in threes made a game. Like, they need that. That the reason their offense is not good is they don't have enough shooting.
No lasers. Agreed.
They're also 22nd in three-point percentage. Like, they need to go get shooting that could guard. Like, that's not DeJounte Murray. It's also not Zach LaVine. Like, Zach LaVine at least is a great three-point shooter. But, like, again, if they trade all this stuff for Zach LaVine, I don't think that's solving their problems either. And I know everybody's looking for wings that can shoot the ball. I get that. But I think there's a
0% chance of the Lakers trading for Zach LaVine. Zero.
Zero. Ooh.
Zero.
0.0.
The Lakers are dead last in three-point attempts per game. Like, you want to, like, that's a straight line to why their offense is bad. There's just not enough shooting. They need shooting that can somewhat guard. That's what they have to be trying to do.
Do we want to hit on
DeJounte Murray is not that kind of player.
Do we want to hit on some other teams that we think are potential aggressive shoppers?
Aggressive shoppers.
Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be very surprised if the Sixers don't do anything between now and the trade deadline. Joel Embiid seems like he practiced Sunday. I think he'll be back for the games Monday and Tuesday. They play the Nuggets on the second night of a back-to-back again for the second time in 5 days. We have a marquee matchup in the league where we have at least one of the teams play on the second night of a back-to-back, which doesn't make a lot of sense. But I expect Philly to try to get better between now and the deadline. I would expect the Knicks to make at least another move between now and the deadline. I'm not sure what. I mean, they've got some flexibility to go in a lot of different directions. As Adrian reported, Mitchell Robinson, decent chance to be back by the end of the season. So, you know, they've got some flexibility to go different directions there. Let's see, who else here would be active?
We talked about the Pacers earlier, but with the fact that they're below the cap, they have Buddy Hield's expiring contract. They have Bruce Brown, who's a big, you know, he's got a player option, but he's a big number. They could
It's a team option.
It's a large expiring contract. Okay.
They've got a lot of expiring money. Buddy Hield and him are two big, not, you know, nice sized expiring contracts. They also have all of their own picks plus the worst of the Thunder's 2024 crop.
Yeah. They have eight. Bobby says they have $8 million in cap space and five tradable firsts, 10 seconds. And so they are in prime position if they want. Now, I don't think they're going to look for rentals. That's why we talked about,
I think
it's not as exciting to talk about the Pacers, but they are as in good a position to make noise as anybody in the league with Philly right there as well.
A couple others I wanted to just hit on real quick. The Kings, kind of the sense I get is they are aggressively exploring, but aren't necessarily operating under the pressure of having to make a move. But they have. They owe the lottery protected pick to Atlanta for a Herder, and other than that, they have all their own. You know, the Thunder come up. I don't think. Well, I mean, I think it's very safe. They're doing much. Presti's not in any major hurry to. He certainly doesn't feel any pressure to make a splash with the evaluation period so far, resulting in a team that's tied for first place in the Western Conference.
I would suspect the Bucks will try to do stuff. John Horst has typically been really aggressive in season, trying to make trades. I know they have limited trade assets. However, one asset they do have is Portland's second round pick, which is a pretty juicy second round pick. And they've got some expiring money to float around, or some money to float around. I don't know if they'll get anything done given the situation they're in, but I would expect that they will explore stuff just based off of Horst's history. Went and traded for Nikola Mirotic at the trade deadline. Went and got, who they traded for last year, Jay Crowder at the trade deadline. Like, they've consistently gone and tried to make moves in season, and that's a pretty good second. It would probably get them in the mix for some stuff. I would guess they'll try to use it to do something.
Well, Jay Crowder is an interesting name, not only to possibly to be traded, but he hasn't played all year. I don't know what he's kind of come back from injury. I don't know if, you know, I don't know how he's looking.
Yeah.
But that could be their sort of move.
Could be.
What about the Heat? Obviously, they were involved in some major, the Dame Lillard conversations this summer.
Heat don't make a lot of in-season trades. I wouldn't rule it out, especially if, you know, if we see some significant names come available. The Heat are always ready to pounce on those, but they typically tend to do their business in the summer. I mean, Brian spent even more time around him than I have, but if I had to guess, I would say they're lower down on the list. I mean, the interesting group, right, is that 9-12 group in the East. All these teams are bad. Chicago, Brooklyn, Atlanta, Toronto. They all, for different reasons, I think, are going to be actively trying to do stuff. You know, maybe the Nets less so, but like the Nets have a lot of guys that if they decide to trade them, Dorian Finney-Smith, Royce O'Neal, they got all these wings they could trade that teams would be interested in. Chicago, we've talked about Zach LaVine incessantly. We just talked about DeJounte Murray. We talked about Pascal Siakam earlier. Like, a lot of the trade market could hinge on what those three, and if you count the Nets, four teams wind up doing.
Well, I think the thing about the Heat is you've got Kyle Lowry's $30 million expiring salary, which gets them into a lot of situations. They also have two tradable firsts, but they are right on, and I mean like within a few hundred thousand of the second apron line. And so forget about Lowry for a second. Even if you get in and start talking about, well, they could package Josh Richardson and Thomas Bryant, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
They are not going to incrementally improve and end up in the second apron.
Yeah.
If they're going to do a deal, it's going to be to try to big move. And I don't know if that's going to be presented for that. In fact, I think it's more likely, because I think Bobby has explained before that Tyler Hero has some bonuses in his contract. If he hits them, I think they go into the second apron. It wouldn't surprise me if they figure out a way to slice off a player just to give them some breathing room so that they could sign somebody in the buyout market. You know, and by the way, in the buyout market, I've got to keep an eye on is PJ Tucker. Because I do think the Clippers are a team as well that is not done. Tucker
PJ does have money for next year too. Yeah.
That's the problem. He's due money next year.
About player option for next year. But they are a team that's, I think, going to be active trying to add to their team over the next few weeks.
Right. So the Clippers, so PJ is $11 million. Yeah, he's got 11.5 next year. Yeah, there's no way he's not picking that up. But it'd be keep an eye on PJ Tucker. He's not really playing. Also Mason Plumlee. He's sort of their third big now that they acquired Daniel Tice. He's getting their backup minutes. And they have a couple of interesting younger players. I don't know if anybody wants Bones Highland at this point. And then
nobody did last year.
PJ Boston. Anyway, the Clippers have one first round pick left that they can trade. I believe it's 2030. Mm-hmm. I don't think they want to trade that, but I do think that they are interested in next year. They're going to be in the full second apron rules, and they're going to be limited in what they can do in aggregating players. So it wouldn't surprise me if they would try to get one more piece, even if it wasn't a guy who's going to really impact their team this year, but would give them something to trade next year. So PJ would be the guy to watch for. But like, that's a player that a team, especially a team in the Eastern Conference, who's maybe not going to, wouldn't face the Clippers in the, you know, the conference playoffs, might be interested in acquiring, especially teams who've had him, like Milwaukee or Miami.
Yeah. Another team I would keep an eye on is the Rockets.
I was going to ask you, Tim, about Dallas and Houston and what your thoughts were on what they were going to do.
I think that, you know, the Rockets, obviously I don't think they do anything short-sighted, but the point of the deal with Oklahoma City was getting Victor Oladipo as an expiring contract. You know, if it's about picks, obviously it'd have to be something that really helps them moving forward, but they had their own from 27 to 30. They had the Nets 24, 26, 27 swap. There's a complicated, like, multi-team, my head hurts looking at it, swap in 25. So they have some draft capital. They're right in the thick of things as far as the play-in. Obviously, they still have a lot of young talent, and they are a competitive team that's still trying to develop good young players. I think you can certainly make an argument that one of the best ways to develop good young players is to get them playoff experience. And I'm looking at like Alperen Şengün and Jabari Smith Jr., Tari Eason. Cam Whitmore has actually been playing really well for them with some injuries.
Yeah, played well in a blowout loss, but Boston I watched last night.
But they, you know, their moves last summer have panned out as they anticipated. And I know they will be aggressive exploring it. I don't know if there's something that's going to come up for them or not, but definitely keep an eye on them. And as far as the Mavericks, I think it's the same thing as far as, you know, there's a lot of discussion linking them to Siakam. You can certainly make a case for it. I think the biggest case against it is, are you going to move forward with a third $40 million a year type of player and one who is not a floor spacer? You know, when you have Luka and Kyrie and you're obviously building around that. I expect them to look to upgrade, but I don't think there's anything close to the desperation last season. And the biggest reason I say that is because Derek Lively II, while he's been hurt a couple times, he's missed last week and change and missed another week and change before with an ankle. But just drafting Derek Lively II, I think they're going to move forward past this season with a sense of optimism. And more specifically, I think Luka does, just because Lively is such a high ceiling superstar role player type of guy, if that makes sense. You know what I'm saying? In other words, totally. I say superstar role player. I think he's got a chance to be an absolute elite rim runner, rim protector, exact kind of center that Luka wants to play with. And so I think there's a totally different near future outlook just because they really seem to have hit big on that pick that they tanked to keep.
And I guess Golden State is busy too, because I can't imagine them just standing pat with this team. I don't know what that means. I feel like I'll be awfully surprised if it's exactly the same roster in a month.
All right. Well, a lot to be discussed. Thank you for spending some time with us here. Thank you to Bon Thompson McMahon. Thank you to Jackson, our producer. Thank you for listening. We'll be talking to you in a few days.
Hey, I think it's fitting that we ended this with some positive about the Mavericks. Have a great week, fellas, and all you out there. And adios, amigos.